I have never forgotten Jerome Johnson, and I hope I never forget the lessons I learned dealing with him. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Jerome Johnson came into my life with a phone call. I was appearing on the Off the Hook radio program, and they always open up the phones at some point in the episode after I talked about working at the Internet Archive and the kind of projects we were involved in. And this old man came across the phone and said, "You are who I have always been looking for." He explained that he had years, decades of history, and he wanted to share it and make it available to the world, and that somebody, anybody who could help him as he dealt with all sorts of problems with the city and with getting his legacy in order, well, that would be a godsend to him. I get offers and inquiries like this all the time. People who tell me they think they're sitting on something valuable or that they want to share, and can I help? And where I can, I always offer to do exactly that. To step in, to be the hero, to help folks, to do that little jump from a bunch of papers or data and make it available to everyone. It sounded like Jerome Johnson needed this as well. He let me know he lived in the Flatbush area of Brooklyn, which was about an hour and a half drive from my home, and we made some rough arrangements over the course of the next few days for me to come down, have a talk with him, and see what sort of plans we could hatch for me to step in and help him. Jerome wasn't the first person who had contacted me in some sort of panic or concern. He's definitely not been the last. What was important was that he claimed to be sitting on a gold mine of information about energy consumption, experiments in science, and that maybe I could help him get the word out. It's not just a case of having access to information. There's so much more out there when you look at someone's collection that gives you context and helps you understand what led to that information. I mean, I don't mind getting a bunch of floppy disks in a binder and then putting it up, but it's really nice when you find typewritten notes or letters in between different members of a user group, or all the little tabs and labels that you find that came along with those diskettes to help you understand what exactly you're looking at. To do that, you have to be there. At various times, I've been in basements of user groups that had long since gone out of business, or been walking through a small collection of boxes of software put up in some shelving unit when the person had gotten away from that sort of computer platform, and now something that maybe I could make live again. I thought that Jerome Johnson was going to be another simple visit. I pulled up to his house, and it was a glorious contraption. It looked sort of like a wooden houseboat had met up with a science experiment. There were little tubes and pieces of plastic nailed to everything. It had odd-shaped windows going up the side. And here was this old man, gray-haired, but looking very polished, very trim, who came out to greet me, shake my hand, and then invite me to sit down on his porch and talk a little bit about his life. This is familiar territory to me, where an older person sits down with a younger person and starts to give them a primer, an introduction, an overview of what life was to them. It can be a somewhat meandering story, but buried within it are all sorts of insights and important information that I would want to know. In the case of Jerome, he explained to me that he had a dream a dream he wanted to see come alive, which was to turn his home into a center of education around alternative energy. What he had was a vision that his Center for Alternative Energy would be a place that kids would travel to who wanted to learn about all sorts of subjects from a different perspective, and overseeing it all would be Jerome. Different rooms that people were staying in, discussing subjects, doing research, and then sharing with each successive generation of learners and explorers. He told me he wanted this to happen as soon as possible because his home, as he put it, was constantly under attack from the city. I didn't quite understand what he had meant when he had been talking about issues like a water bill or dealing with electricity and not being on the grid, but it did become clear soon. We talked for about 45-50 minutes outside on his porch. And by we talked, I mean he talked. But he eventually let me into his house, and that's when I discovered he had no electricity, no running water, and that he had been modifying his home so that he had been able to take rainwater and use that for washing and drinking, and that he had a series of small battery-operated lights that he could use whenever he really needed to see something. But on the whole, it was a house that he understood intuitively and just walked around in the darkness. I'm not 100% happy or comfortable walking around in the dark in a stranger's home, but here we were. For the next couple of hours, Jerome gave me a tour of his home and potential future center. We went down to the basement, which was a museum of tools and wiring and materials. We went to the back of the house, where he had modified it into a multi-story workshop with bicycles up on the wall and pieces of his childhood buried in among the boxes. And then we went up for a couple floors, each one piles of material, of papers, of books. And finally, up to his bedroom, which was small and cramped, and had a collection of inventions he had made, each of which he explained to me. And with a small amount of light coming in through a bizarre series of skylights, as well as a window in the front. Let me explain where I was coming from. I'm an action-based person. I look at most of the world as a series of problems or projects that need to be addressed. If you show me a driveway that's covered in snow, I come up with ways to clean it off. If you show me a car that's damaged, I try to figure out who can fix it. If you show me something dirty, I want to know how to clean it. If you show me something that's inside some sort of magnetic media, I will want to know how to extract it to make it more permanent. Same thing with optical media, same thing with books, with printed materials, with posters. How can I make it the most resilient and future-proofed as possible with a budget and time that I have? To some people, that seems obvious and intuitive, but that's not always the case to everyone I meet. Throughout the conversation, I was trying to figure out what to do for Jerome. Jerome explained to me a ongoing 30-year fight with the city, where he had disconnected his water back in the 80s, and the city claimed that they were taxing him for water usage even though he didn't have a water meter. He considered this a crime against humanity, and multiple times explained legal battles he had had with the city over the years. This was far outside of my knowledge. He also explained to me his goals with his papers. To me, papers when you're in your 80s are to be preserved, digitized, turned into exhibits of what drove you and what mattered. To Jerome, they were keystones of a foundation of education and for-profit access to his knowledge that he could use to pay for other aspects of the center. I didn't know what to do with that plan. I also am a documentary filmmaker, and I thought to myself, maybe I could do a documentary of Jerome, maybe use my photographic equipment to record his statements and get the word out there, get that critical mass of awareness of this man's situation and what he was offering, and maybe in that way, help him. I would float some of these things with him during the hours that we spent together that day, and sometimes he would bat them down and say he didn't want to think of it that way, and other times he seemed to be somewhat interested in it, but kind of moved back to one of his refrains, the problems with the tax bill, the problems with the city, the plan for the alternative energy center that he mentioned multiple times. It was a pretty disjointed conversation, not unlike one I have had before with people of an advanced age. They move into reveries, repetitions of different stories that matter to them. They circle around to a different angle of something they know about and move away from what you're discussing. You swim upstream through it and try to work out intent, and you stay respectful and you let them guide the conversation, because twisting them away will never, ever work. At one point, Jerome handed me a few old things, an electronics manual, a poster for a product that was long out of circulation, and these I understood. These are things that you digitize to put online. When we got to the end of our day together, Jerome shook my hand, this quiet, thin, bony hand, and wished me well and talked about the partnership we were going to have and the things we were going to do together. I had in my mind a rough plan to start working on coming up with his story, with his narrative, in a way that I could express to the maximum amount of people, to bring them in and give him the heartening support and attention that I thought he needed. A day or two later, I got a call from Jerome. Jerome had a very, very specific complaint. Jerome explained to me that I had done the day wrong, that I had asked the wrong questions, that I had focused on the wrong things. He gave me a litany of questions that I should have asked, that he would have happily answered, and talked about the real steps that were to be taken to make a difference, to have a positive effect on his life. And he indicated I had disappointed him dearly and had joined the ranks of other people who had disappointed him. Naturally, I was unsure what to do, but I moved into saying that I was sorry, that I hadn't picked up on this information, that I hadn't asked these questions, and asked him what we could do. And he told me that I should be helping him find the future of the products he was pushing. I didn't even know where to begin with that. I barely remember this phone call. All I remember is Jerome's contained anger, the cold voice of somebody who is bitterly disappointed, like they discovered that you took an item from their home, or that you promised a check was coming and it never came, and now they were suffering financially for it. It was a sense of betrayal, a sense of being treated poorly by someone you had let into your home. I had no way of processing this. This had gone strangely, weirdly south. I made a kind of general promise to him to get back to him, and I sat in my room, and I tried to figure out where I'd gone wrong. I offered him everything. I was willing to do a documentary. I was willing to write about him. I was willing to get his word out. I was willing to take what he had and make it available online in some form. In other words, I'd opened up every tool in my toolbox. And he was telling me I'd done nothing at all. I did some research on Jerome, research of a more deep fashion than my first checking in with his story. I found a newspaper article that had been written in the local paper at Brooklyn, all about the Alternative Energy Center, all about Jerome's issues with the city, all about how he was trying to make a difference in the world. I tracked down that reporter, and I gave them a call. That call saved me a lot of time. The reporter, when I asked him, said, "Oh, yes, Jerome." And I asked him, "Is it strange that I offered all my help and listened to his story, and he bitterly reprimanded me on doing it all wrong?" And he said, "Oh, no. No, I got that exact same treatment. I wrote everything I wrote, and he told me I hadn't done it right." And I said, "Isn't it weird that he hasn't been offered any support?" And the reporter told me, "Oh, he has been offered support. He was offered a residency in Ithaca, New York, to do meetings and get-togethers with students about his alternative energy plans and his research. And he had turned it down because he didn't want to travel and stay in Ithaca. He'd been offered other pieces of help, but he'd rejected it or fallen out with the person or decided they weren't on the same team. They weren't in lockstep with his plans, his ultimate goals. And now that he had entered into his 80s, he was just getting more and more set in and getting more and more bitter and more vicious when dealing with folks who really did want to help him. It turned out there were documentary filmmakers who had filmed him talking about his ideas. Those films are up on YouTube. People had been doing what they thought they needed to do. But Jerome had moved here towards the end of his life into some sort of internalized image of what would be the perfect situation, and nothing in reality was going to live up to it. So what happened? Well, I never spoke to Jerome Johnson again. I saw one or two more stories about him. I saw a lot of the same details go by. A few years later, I happened to look up his name and saw that he had died at the age of 86, and his long estranged wife and his children had all decided to sell the house, which had been gutted, removed of all of its strange attachments and unusual materials, and was now a generic upscale condo, selling for $600,000 to a willing market, fully painted over, fully rebuilt on the inside, and containing none of the history of the unusual, bitter man who had spent 50 years angry at the world. I've never forgotten about Jerome. It's hard for me to classify it as a failure. I don't know if there was really any path any person who reached out to him could traverse and get him to work with them. He had long-term friends who had interviewed him on video, had brought him up to talk with students at various colleges. Folks had made documentaries, written articles, supported him at meetings. They'd reached out. They'd tried to do everything they could do. And it wasn't enough for him. It wasn't what he wanted. There was something else he wanted that he couldn't quite explain to people or couldn't quite get people behind. He'd done this for decades. He'd had the focus to do research, to run businesses, to work in photography and science and energy. And yet somehow, at the end, he'd never quite convinced the world of what he perceived of his rightful place in it. Did I miss something here? Is there a detail you can make out? Is there a word, a phrase, something I could have said to Jerome that would have changed the path? Or do I just need to accept that you can't save everything? This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, Forrest Fuqua, James Bakoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters all over the world who have been reaching out, communicating, and helping me get out of debt.